listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. We ball. We go now to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline, and we're very happy to be joined by Matt Williamson, former Cleveland Browns scout, NFL analyst for ESPN, now freelance NFL writer and host of the Dynasty Blueprint. Matt, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. It's great to talk to you guys.
Great to talk to you as well. Obviously, this year the Browns went into the draft with 10 picks, came out with 14 players drafted, one more acquired in a trade, former second-rounder Jamar Taylor, added three future picks, a 1 and 2-2. So before we get into the specifics of the players, what did you think of the overall process, strategy, framework that the Browns operated and utilized in this draft?
Well, I mean, even going back to when the offseason started and free agency, I think the shortcut to analyzing the Browns was, boy, this new group doesn't know what they're doing. Same old Browns. They're a mess. They're letting all their great players, their best players, go in free agency. They're in over their heads. And that's not true, I don't think. I mean, I think they have a very clear plan in place. That being said, I mean, I think they're going to be the worst team in the league this year, you know, and that may pay off in draft capital going forward. But it's pretty clear what they want to do. And what they want to do is accumulate massive amounts of picks. Because if you look at the, you know, even the best of teams, if you hit 50% on your picks, you're doing great. So if you hit 50% on 12 picks as opposed to 6 picks, well, then you got, you know, guys that are going to help you, and more of them, and they're cheaper. Clearly, you know, they let guys like Gibson go and Schwartz and those type of guys because they're going to get a ton of complimentary or compensatory picks next year. So they're going to have even more and more draft capital. Like I said, I think they'll probably pick first overall as well. And the other thing is, you know, what we didn't know, because they didn't really add anybody, but in this draft, it's pretty apparent that they think it's money well spent to go after pass rushers and receivers.
Matt, as you talked about what the Browns are doing now, is there any team in recent history, say the last decade, that has kind of been to the bottom where the Browns have been and kind of taken on this accumulate talent and really start a rebuild from the bottom that actually saw through to success happening in the NFL?
Not that comes to mind. You know, I mean, I haven't really given it a whole lot of thought, to be honest. But, you know, a team like the Ravens, rarely are talked about, but almost every year they lead the league in compensatory picks. You know, that's not an accident. You know, they just let Kelechi Osemele go for huge money to Oakland. And they're going to get a third-round pick in return for him a year from now. You know, they've used that formula to a very good degree as well. You know, you look at the Patriots, they trade down a lot in the draft to accumulate picks, sure, to take more shots. So, you know, those are successful organizations that are sort of doing it to some degree, but having Tom Brady doesn't hurt either.
No, it certainly doesn't. Talk with Matt Williamson now. All right, let's get into this draft class. Start at the top, Corey Coleman and Emmanuel Ogba. What did you think of those two players?
I like Coleman a lot. I like Treadwell better, but you know, it's a fine line. They're very different receivers. One thing I don't think we really know for sure is, you know, what exactly are they looking for at each position? I mean, that's becoming more and more clear. You know, Hugh Jackson comes over from Cincinnati, and Coleman is not A.J. Green, but they did take a lot of deep shots there in Cincinnati, often to Green, and Coleman fits that very well.
He does, and he's explosive, a guy who can make big plays once the ball gets in his hands, which is something this team wanted to do. They also wanted to stop the quarterback. Ogba, a big pass rusher. Carl Nassib, a guy who led the nation in sacks a year ago. How do you see those guys transitioning and projecting at this level?
Yeah, and before we even mention that, I mean, it goes back to Coleman as well. I mean, it was a massive theme in this draft wasn't only we want pass catchers and guys that are going to get to the quarterback, but also highly productive college players. I mean, I think that this new organization, this new front office is very, very concerned with productive football players. And not many are. You know, I mean, or not everyone is. That sounds, you know, rudimentary. But Seattle consistently brings in people that aren't really productive football players, and then they mold them into that. So that's something that that obviously this organization cares about. And those pass rushers are great examples. I mean, I think the arrow is very much pointing up on Nassib. You know, he walked on at Penn State. I mean, yeah, you know, he's But he's got a lot of ability. I think you can move him all over the line. Ogba, I don't love, but I like where they got him in the draft, too. I mean, again, a productive, pure edge-rushing guy. His measurables are probably a little bit better than what he actually is as a prospect.
Matt, fill in our fan base based around the 14 picks and having, you know, two firsts and two seconds and thirds next year as well. What's the hit rate? And kind of take us round by round. What's the hit rate of a first or second round pick? And then maybe even go into like the third day or even by days. What's the hit rate of a first day pick, a second day pick, and a third day pick so that a Browns fan can understand, okay, we have 14 guys. About this many have a chance to really make it in the NFL and make a mark here for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, and I don't have those numbers. I mean, I think that's a great question. I wish I had that information off the top of my head. But I think a good way of looking at it is just go back, 4 years ago when it was the Eric Fisher draft. And that was not a very good draft class. But if you look every year at the first-round picks and say how many of their fifth-year options are picked up, you know, I mean, like this past year, 8 or 9 of the first-round picks aren't going to be back with their new teams because they weren't happy with them. E.J. Manuel, Jarvis Jones, there's many of them. And, you know, I think that's about the going rate, although that wasn't a wonderful draft class. So, I mean, off the top of my head, I mean, I think on the first day, depending what you call a hit, I mean, if a first-round pick at least needs to be a starter for you, I don't think he's a bust if he isn't a Pro Bowler, so to speak. I mean, all these teams have got a shiny new toy, and they all expect all of them to be Pro Bowlers and, you know, franchise greats. But if you get 5 productive years out of a first-round pick, I mean, I think that's a hit for sure. And, you know, second- and third-rounders, if you get starters, that's great. And in the second day, if you could pull 1 or 2 that sticks with your team, you'll be in really good shape.
Talk with Matt Williamson. Matt, Cody Kessler was a pick that a lot of people were surprised by where the Browns took him. Hugh Jackson saying, you got to trust me. What did you think of Kessler in college and how he projects at this level?
Yeah, it really did shock me, you know, because I spent a year on Butch Davis' staff with, you know, Garcia was our quarterback at the time. I'm from Pittsburgh and know the area, you know, this country well. And Garcia, I mean, you have to have a strong arm. I mean, I'm a believer in that if 5 years from now Kessler is the quarterback there and everything hits and the Browns are hosting the AFC Championship game, I know that sounds really a long way away, and he can't cut the wind, well, that's a problem. And his arm strength really worries me for the stadium that he plays in. That being said, my hunch is Hugh Jackson saw a lot of Andy Dalton in him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if, you know, exactly what they did in Cincinnati was Dalton was a early second-round pick that is never going to light the world on fire, but they consistently put a lot of resources in early picks in their running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers because they know he needs help. So I think that's what the Browns are thinking here, too.
The Browns drafted 4 receivers.
And it works, but they still haven't won a playoff game in Cincinnati.
That's correct. Now, that might not all be Andy Dalton's fault, but some of it certainly falls with him. And I've made the case on the show that I think he's the kind of guy that keeps you in purgatory because he's good enough to keep you competitive, but I'm not sure if he's good enough to win the whole thing for you. The wide receivers the Browns drafted, we talked Coleman earlier. They added 3 others, Ricardo Lewis, Jordan Payton, the all-time receiving leader at UCLA, and also Hollywood Higgins, the all-time leader in every receiving category at Colorado State. This team badly needed receivers. They bring in 4. What do you think of the other 3 besides Coleman?
Higgins and Payton I like quite a bit, and I think that they make any team more probably 3rd-type receivers in a perfect scenario. Highly, highly productive quarterbacks, best friend types. It's clearly like I said, the production was absolutely key in what the Browns were doing and bringing guys in. I'm sure you brought this up 100 times, but I think, you know, drafting that many wide receivers sure makes you worry about Josh Gordon. You know, you'd much rather have Gordon opposite Coleman than one of these 3 guys we just talked about opposite
Of course
Coleman.
You would. Unfortunately, you can't count on Josh Gordon, unfortunately.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think that tells you as much as you need to know of their thoughts on Gordon and his future with the Browns. But it's going to be, you know, a massive undertaking. Like I said, I still think they have the worst roster in the league. But if they can hit on 4 or 5 of these guys from this draft class, especially Coleman, they'll have a start.
Matt, you talked about production, and there's really – maybe beyond just Corey Coleman, another extremely productive guy, happened to be the last pick of the Cleveland Browns. That's Scooby right out of Arizona. Just talk about his tape in 2014, the drop-off, but yet the bowl game he had in 15, and so many people might discount him because of where he was drafted, but he's been a very, very good college player, and where do you think he projects in the NFL?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's surprising that he went as late as he did, because he's one of these, and you see him every year, and they tend to stick with teams because they're great on special teams. They're smart. You know, people talk about, boy, he's not real fast. He didn't test that well. But some of the best linebackers take fewer steps than the bad linebackers to get to where they need to be, because they're so instinctive. They see things so well. And I think he fits that mold. I mean, ideally in today's NFL, with as much pass, you know, as much pass as there is, as much nickel and dime you see on the field, you don't want him out on the field in that situation. And this draft really showed us across the league that if you're not a force in the passing game, and the Browns showed us this too with pass rushers and pass catchers, that, you know, you're not nearly as valuable as you were 5 years ago or a couple years ago. So I think he fits that mold. But to get him that late, I mean, he still could be an integral part of early down defense for the Browns and a leader in a couple years, a great special teamer. I like that pick a lot.
Yeah, hopefully he is a guy. I know that my friends down in Tucson are huge fans of Scooby Wright, a guy who was productive and is kind of a folk hero down there. Have you seen the roster of the Browns' undrafted free agents? Because, you know, many teams in the NFL, a couple of those guys seem to make it every year. Have you seen who they brought in so far this year?
I'm not on top of that, to be honest with you. Sorry.
Okay. The big name is probably Mike Matthews, son of Hall of Famer Bruce Matthews, center of Texas A&M. I was just curious if there was anybody there. Let me ask you this, though. Were you surprised that with 14 picks?
I went down this road. When I was a scout for the Browns, we were not a good football team, and I was sort of instrumental in getting Josh Cribbs there, you know, as an undrafted free agent, because we talked to him basically from the fifth round on, just saying, hey, why would you go to Pittsburgh? They're 15-1. You're not going to make that team. You know, you can attract better undrafted free agents when you have a lot of roster spots to give, and the Browns do.
Yes, they certainly do, because, you know, this is a team that's looking to find guys to get in there and compete, and they're giving 25 young players, 14 rookies, 11 undrafted free agents, the chance to do that. I wanted to ask you about the running backs, because we talk about adding 25 players. Not a single one of them was a running back. Did that surprise you, and what do you think that means for Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson?
I think it means two things. That, first of all, if I was rebuilding a team, the last ingredient, the last piece of the puzzle that I would add is a running back. You know, I mean, it sort of shocked me that Tennessee took Henry. You know, I would wait till next year. Not to mention next year's running back class is supposed to be amazing. So, you know, if I'm a rebuilding team, I'm not using up picks on a running back who's going to bash his head against the wall for a couple years before we're good. But I really like Duke Johnson. I mean, I think Duke Johnson has a chance to be a real difference maker in this league. One of the Browns' best players as soon as next year. I've always been high on Crowell, but, you know, he's hard to really get behind. And the guy he didn't mention is Watson. I mean, I think Watson's highly intriguing.
Yeah, he came with Hugh Jackson from that Cincinnati practice squad. For people that don't know much about him, why would you say that he is so intriguing?
Big, powerful, move the chains, Jeremy Hill type, you know, that I think that Hugh Jackson sees in him, but more powerful. I mean, bigger, downhill, does not mess around, game finisher type of player. I can't wait to see him in the preseason.
Matt, where were you on the top two quarterbacks in this draft? Because it seemed for the Browns it was Goff or bust, and once the Rams stole him, that's when the things really picked up for them to move out of that number two spot. What did you think of the two quarterbacks at the top of this class, Goff and Carson Wentz?
Liked them both an awful lot. I mean, I would have preferred Winston or Mariota a year ago. I preferred Goff slightly over Wentz. I mean, I really like his feet in the pocket, his mind for the game, his overall accuracy, but he's going to take some time. You know, I mean, everybody looks at it like Goff's from the bigger school, so he's more NFL ready. Well, he really isn't, because, I mean, he has to learn to operate from under center.
Sure.
Wentz handled all the protections. He did a lot more at the line of scrimmage, a lot more from a mental standpoint. If one of them's going to be a Hall of Famer, though, I think it's Wentz. You know, I mean, I really like his physical ability. His deep accuracy worries me a little bit. I think his ceiling is very high in an Andrew Luck fashion. But in a nutshell, I prefer Goff slightly.
And how do you, as a scout, kind of discount the fact that Goff played at Cal, you know, gets a higher level of competition, and of course, Wentz at North Dakota State? Do you take that into account, and what percentage do you grade, you know, the film, or do you just take them for what they are?
No, I think you really have to look at it and say, what traits are we seeing on tape? Because, I mean, no quarterback, I mean, the term NFL ready for quarterbacks is crazy. Nobody's close to being NFL ready coming out of any school. It could be Alabama or Ohio State or wherever. Yeah, I mean, Goff took a beating at Cal. I mean, just because he was at a high level, his teammates weren't helping him, where the opposite was true with Wentz. You know, Wentz had a great supporting cast against lesser competition, but surprisingly, it took him a while to get on the field. You know, I mean, they were winning national titles with some guy that's an accountant now or whatever, and he, you know, why would you bench him? So I think you really just need to look at the attributes. You know, how well do they see the field? What are their feet like? What's the arm strength like? Get them on the board, all those different things, as opposed to who they're lining up against.
Matt, we certainly appreciate the time. Thank you very much for being here and breaking down this Browns draft class.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Matt Williamson, our guest there on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Call us up. Also, later today, I'll give away a couple tickets to FanFest on my Twitter. Come out and see us. Matt and I will be there at First Energy Stadium this Saturday. And, of course, Sunday, Dog Pound Report, 11:30 on News Channel 5. We'll be back to your phone calls, 216-578-0850 here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
The rookies have reported here in Berea today, getting ready for the rookie minicamp that begins tomorrow. We're all excited to see those guys. 216-578-0850. By the way, Matt Wilhelm, while I was reading,
yes,
that they are debuting a new technology called Hyperloop.
Okay.
Hyperloop 1 is something that can travel about 700 miles an hour and take a person from Columbus to Cleveland in about 12 minutes.
Is it on a rail?
Yes, it looks that way. But
is
they
it like
one?
Like,
it's
like,
almost like in a tube.
Is it similar to what they've been using or potentially using, like
in China
and Hong Kong? And
I don't know. It was a demonstration, first glimpse at a propulsion system that creators hope will rocket people and cargo through tubes at the speed of sound in 5 years.
I don't know if I want to be going the speed of sound.
They say the tubes can run underground, a safe alternative to highway crossings in inclement weather. Propulsion technology involves levitating pods that use electricity and magnets to move through a low-friction environment at more than 700 miles per hour.
What is the projection? Is this like a 30-30? Or, I'm sorry, 20-30?
5 years, they say.
5 years?
Yeah. They did a demonstration in the desert in Vegas that worked.
Okay.
I don't know if I'd go in that tube.
I'm just...
That sounds a little like...
You said speed of sound?
700 miles an hour. Like, if something goes wrong, I feel like you're not walking away from that tube.
No.
You're like...
What if that tube doesn't stop and you just keep looping on that damn thing?
You're going to run into something.
You'd be a dizzy mofo.
It would be bad. It would be bad news. I mean, Gibbs, you're a person who needs to see things to believe them. What are you thinking about that?
He's taking calls. He's working.
No, he's not.
I am working. Trying to figure out tomorrow's show.
Let's focus on today's show while it's still happening, Gibbs.
Hey, man. Always got to be looking ahead. Got to one foot ahead.
Joe Thomas, by the way.
Great picture.
Making fun of Photo Day. Having
as
a good time
well
with
he
it.
Should.
Why?
Because Photo Day's dumb.
No, it's not. What's the difference?
It's Photo Day.
Were there people on your teams that were always jokesters on Photo Day, Matt Wilhelm?
Photo Day, no. I mean, Photo Day wasn't a big deal for us.
It's exactly. Like sit down, photo take
day,
a picture, and move on.
Photo Day was, yeah, sit down, take a picture because you're bothering me from something else that I should be doing. And then the team picture day is also very awkward because it happens once the last preseason game is over, cuts are made, practice squad guys are added. You awkwardly get into your full uniform with pads, which is something that I absolutely despise at any level.
I like the ones with no
pads.
I hate wearing
like gym shoes with football socks, pants with no pads, your belt on, your jersey with no shoulder pads below it, and that's it. You just look so bare, like, cause you're not wearing like all the cool things that you like, the gloves and the wristbands and the tape and the helmet on eye black. Yeah, man, you're just like, you feel naked.
That's what the Browns should.
And then you just put 53 guys up on, you know, some bleachers with coaches randomly dressed all nice like they are on game day. You take a picture and you strip it off and just throw it all in a pile and walk in your skivvies and get dressed for practice.
I used to enjoy as a kid. There was always the. I would like the 49ers ones. It was my dad would always get the 49ers. They're so funny. And back then, the coaches would be in their polos in those teeny, teeny, tiny coaches shorts. Yep. And they'd be standing there with their arms behind their back. Everybody's got their arms behind their back looking all serious. And I'd imagine now, the funny thing is, you do that, right? You take that picture within a week on most NFL teams, multiple people in that picture aren't going to be on your team.
Yes.
It is interesting, like by the end of the year when you look.
Oh, by the end of the year, it's a ton. Oh. But I'm saying, like, there are guys who think they make the 53, and then as cuts happen around the league, you go through, well, and then all of a sudden, like, wait a second. We're swapping you and you and you and you.
That's a lesson that I learned, you know, that vets made us very aware of very early, that your agent never really tells you, because they're always blowing smoke up your butt that you're going to make the team, but it might not necessarily always be true, is you want to be on the active roster – The Saturday night, you want to be in the hotel. Actually, you know what? You want to wake up Sunday morning
on the team.
On the team still, yeah. Because that means you're either going to be active or inactive. I don't care as long as I'm in the active 53. Because once I'm on that active 53, and essentially it's considered the game actually starts, I'm getting paid for 16 games.
Exactly.
I'm in. Cut me tomorrow. Cool. You're paying me for 16 games. I'm going to sign somewhere else, and they're going to pay me for 15. Double dipping, baby.
Yep. No offset.
You only get
language.
One shot.
Yeah, you got to make it to that first game.
Got to make it to the first game. So, yes, when you do that picture, you know, you're not doing it Friday, Saturday, Sunday before your opener or before you're hitting the road for your first game. So you have to do it that week. And there are guys, you know, as there's turnover on other rosters throughout the NFL, practice squads change, active roster, bump down, bump up, cuts, so on and so forth. But you're right. It changes. It changes in a matter of days.
Wasn't it only a couple of years ago that we went in with our final 53 without a kicker?
That was,
and then we signed Shane Graham like in the middle of that week.
Yeah, because our kicker had pulled up lame.
That was 14, wasn't it?
It's 14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. I think everybody should just wear their helmets this year. That's for the team photo. Like, all right, no one thinks we have a shot. Everybody thinks we don't have any stars. That's fine. We're all just going to wear our helmets with our jersey. You know. Wear your entire outfit, but wear your helmet. Who cares?
Yeah, but then you can't see the people.
Exactly, because it's a team effort.
Gibbs getting philosophical.
Everybody's above the
individual. Would you want to put your helmet on for no reason, Matt Wilhelm?
What do you mean?
If you had to take the team picture in a helmet?
You're taking it as a team. You don't want to stand. You don't want anybody to stand out.
No, it doesn't make sense.
But are the helmets comfortable? Like, do you like?
Yeah.
You don't mind putting it on for no reason?
No.
No problem.
Now, yes. When it's your job to do it,
yeah,
it's like putting on a baseball cap.
Okay.
I actually just got another tweet, and this is from Gibbs. Pat Coyne texts me. He goes, "Does the Hyperloop have a bar car?
Could you even drink something when you're moving?"
And I just
fast?
Said, "Only 12 minutes, bro. Got to pound them." It was my response. So you might. It might be a shots. It's not drinks at the bar. It's shots.
Yeah, it runs using magnets. I mean, it would only
be
shots.
I'm in, man.
You're in?
Get me somewhere fast. Let's go.
So
I don't need to see
anything.
I can
do two drinks in 12 minutes.
I think you could literally dump the drink in the air, and it would just fly into your mouth because you're going that quickly. Like, you don't even have to drink out of the glass. You just kind of dump it in the air.
Just throw it up in the air.
It's all relative.
Splash it in your face.
Yeah. Right. It'll be dry in 20 seconds.
I mean, that would be that is moving.
700 miles per hour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when you're in the air, it doesn't feel like you're moving that fast when you're on a plane, because they'll go like 550, 560, 600 with some of the big planes.
Yeah, it doesn't. On the ground?
On the ground, and you look outside and trees were with you.
Oh. Well, put it like this. I mean,
won't even see the trees.
From here to Columbus, it's about 2 hours going 70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going 10 times faster in 12 minutes.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm all in.
But wait till you see what it's going to cost you to get there in 12 minutes.
Yeah.
I wonder
you might be all out.
I don't know if I want to do that, though.
If it runs on magnets, I don't know that the cost would be that great. I mean, I imagine putting it together, the infrastructure, especially if they're trying to do this underground. Were they just digging up the world?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm having landscaping done at my house right now, and landscaping, yeah, digging, putting in sprinklers,
something?
Trenching, and so on and so forth. It ain't cheap.
Not cheap.
So you're going to pay for that for a very long time until they make their – and they got to be profitable.
Ugh. I definitely think it could be it would be interesting. It would be interesting. I'd be a little nervous. I'd be much more nervous for that than flying on a plane.
Yeah.
Okay. Why?
Afraid of planes?
Doesn't
you're not,
matter.
Gibbs, you're not on the ground. You're like you're in the ground.
Fine. If you're gonna, if I'm gonna die,
I died in a Hyperloop to Columbus.
Okay.
For what?
Well, either
the Buckeye Spring Game.
If the plane crashes, it's not gonna matter anyways.
Some flying pizza.
Yeah.
Unless the pilot pulls out some miraculous landing, you're dead anyways.
That would be a worse way to go, like, because you have to think about it when you're like in a plane.
High speed, baby, bang, dead. Whatever. Been a hell of a run.
I'd like to stay alive.
That's all. I think that should be the goal.
That is the goal. Yes.
Just saying.
That is the goal. Just saying. All right.
Bang, dead.
Bang, dead. Hell of a ride. Great. Fantastic. All right. When we come,
that's an all-timer right there. Forget it.
That was unbelievable. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls if you got them. 216-578-0850. Or if we don't, we will go ahead and take a look at the wide receiver position. I think this is going to be very interesting to see how this all shakes out when it is all said and done here. When you look at this wide receiver room, the guys that are in it now, the four that are coming in, how that's going to all shake itself out is going to be fascinating to see this offseason. We'll break that down when we return on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. Not afraid of high-speed trains. Something we'll add to his resume. And, of course, the great meatball. Take a look at the wide receiver position now. Coming into camp, here are the wide receivers currently on the Browns roster. Terrell Pryor, Marlon Moore, Darius Jennings, Andrew Hawkins, Brian Hartline, Ronnell Hall, and Taylor Gabriel. Now, the Browns have not had a 1,000-yard receiver in back-to-back seasons. The Browns have not had more than 8 touchdowns from their wide receiver group combined in back-to-back seasons. The Browns have not had multiple receivers with more than 650 yards in back-to-back seasons. Obviously, it was a position they felt that they needed to attack and attack aggressively. In comes Corey Coleman, your first-round pick. In comes Ricardo Lewis, your fourth-round pick, 6'1", 214 out of Auburn, runs a 4.340. In comes the leading receiver in UCLA history, Jordan Payton. And in comes the leading receiver in the history of Colorado State, Rashard Higgins. Obviously, it's a position that they addressed. You currently have 7 guys here. You've added 4 more to that room. That'll give you 11 guys in the wide receiver room. 5 probably will make it.
Hugh likes his weapons.
Maybe 6 at the absolute most.
Sure. And I think as you read off the Browns prior to this draft class that are, you know, are currently here under contract working out as Cleveland Browns, I throw this question out there. I need a first down. I need a touchdown. Discount the fact that Gary Barnage is doubled. Okay. Who are you throwing the ball to? You know? And I think as we get analysts on and draft guys on to review what we did, taking 4 swings out of 14 is hopefully to find that guy, whether it be Corey Coleman, Jordan Payton, Hollywood Higgins, or, you know, Ricardo Lewis turns into, you know, a raw speedster type.
Martavis Bryant.
Yeah, or I mean a red zone target, whatever it is. That's what I question. I question the production of the guys that we have. I question the same way that I did earlier. I question the production behind Gary Barnage. Question the production behind Brian Hartline and Andrew Hawkins. You have Taylor Gabriel. Okay. You take him into account. He started 15, 17 game, 20 game, 25 games in his career, right? But beyond Darius Jennings, I mean, Terrell Pryor is a quarterback playing wide receiver now.
Here are the numbers of your returning wide receivers on your roster from 1 year ago. Brian Hartline, 46 catches, 523 yards, 2 touchdowns, 11.4 a catch. Andrew Hawkins, 27 catches, 276 yards, 0 touchdowns, 10.2 a catch. Taylor Gabriel, 28 catches, 241 yards, 0 touchdowns, 8.6 a catch. Marlon Moore, 7 catches, 81 yards, 11.6 a catch, 1 touchdown. Darius Jennings, 14 catches, 117 yards, 8.4 a catch, 0 touchdowns. Terrell Pryor had 8 targets, caught 1 pass last year for 42 yards. Rinnell Hall, no targets, no catches. That's what you've got coming back. You're talking about a grand total of 3 touchdowns, not a single person who caught multiple passes averaging 12 yards a catch.
Right.
You needed to get bigger, stronger, faster, and they did that in this draft class. But really, when you look at it, Darius Jennings, undrafted free agent last year, wasn't a hugely productive receiver in college. Taylor Gabriel, undersized, undrafted free agent from Texas Christian. Andrew Hawkins, undrafted free agent. Marlon Moore, undrafted free agent. So this is a team that doesn't have really much pedigree whatsoever at the wide receiver position. Brian
No.
Hartline, obviously the elder statesman, former fourth-round pick from Ohio State, led the team of the guys returning, led them in receiving last year. But you needed that. I believe that all 4 of these rookies have a good shot to make this team.
I agree. And I think, how about this? And I know it's significantly different, but I want to look into it, and it's something that I'll consistently want to do all year long, is look at the production. Maybe not last year, because I thought the Bengals offense was truly firing on all cylinders. That's the 2018 Hugh Jackson offense for us, right? But even look at 14, the production that you got out of Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert and A.J. Green. You know, okay, Corey Coleman is essentially our A.J. Green if Josh Gordon's not, okay? Who's going to play the accent role, Mohamed Sanu, Marvin Jones role? We've got our 2 backs the same way he has his 2 backs. We've got our tight end. It has their tight end. You know, look at the production that we have there in as huge, or even go back to the 13, you know, with even less weapons, because that's probably what we're going to be like with Hugh Jackson. Same template, different, you know, less producing players who are both before their prime, but grew into their prime, which was 2015 with Hugh Jackson and all the bullets being fired.
And what he's going to want is a 1 and a 2. That's what he wants. He needs his top 2 guys. This isn't an offense that typically features 3 wide receivers, although we are all very familiar with Sanu. Gibbs, off the top of your head, let's play guess the stats. What do you think Sanu, who was their 3rd option, had last year?
In terms of catches?
Catches, yards, touchdowns.
Oh, I'm going to say 40.
Just got paid $7.5 million a year.
Yeah, I'm going to say he probably had 54 catches, 725 yards, and like 5 touchdowns.
I'm going to say he had stats very similar to Brian Hartline.
33 catches.
Okay, which is less than Hartline.
394 yards.
200 less than Hartline. Actually, about 100 yards.
0 touchdowns. That's what Mohamed Sanu did last year, and he just got a $7.5 million a year deal from the Atlanta Falcons. Marvin Jones.
What did he do in 14, though? 14 was a better year for Sanu.
14 was a better year for Sanu because there was no Marvin Jones.
Correct.
So in 14, he had 56 for 790 and 5.
Right.
Their 3rd receiver that year, 17, 193 and 1, was Brandon Tate.
So there you go.
So this is a team that wants to support 2 receivers at a high level. Last year, the number 2 receiver was Marvin Jones.
Right.
Not Mohamed Sanu. He had 65, 8, 16 and 4.
So again, this was an epic failure for Gibbs guessing numbers.
That's why we love Gibbs guessing the numbers. It's such a slam dunk game. So really, when I look at it, you know, Brian Hartline played his best football last year when he was moved inside into the slot. That's where Andrew Hawkins lives. That's not a huge priority in this offense.
No.
And number one. Number two, Hartline is nearly $4 million this year. I think it's $3.5 million. Hawkins is only $1 million. So that's something that could factor in. But they're looking for... You can pencil in right now. Corey Coleman, pen it in right now. Corey Coleman's going to play the A.J. Green role. He's going to lead this team in targets, catches, and yards as long as
yes.
he's healthy. What they're looking for is for Higgins, Peyton, or Lewis. And I think Lewis is the one who could end up being the role player vertical guy, but they're looking for Peyton or Higgins, I think, to step in and win that number 2 job.
Yeah, I agree. And I think based on their production in college, they project very well as a number 2.
Right.
And they were you didn't stretch on this guy. Yeah, on either guy to solidify him as a number 2 or to potentially say, oh, Peyton Higgins, they can be a number 1 in time. No, You went and got your number one in Coleman. This is your accent piece.
The Bengals, believe it or not, in the last 4 years have not had a season where three wide receivers had more than 500 yards, which surprised me when you think about it, because you heard so much hype about all these guys. They have not had a season where Sanu, Green, Jones all had 500 yards receiving in the same season. They do like the tight end. Obviously, last year, the tight end, Tyler Eifert, had 52, 615, and 13 touchdowns in only 13 games. Barnage is really your third option. This is really much more of a team that likes to run the football and then likes to have two receivers on the outside, a guy who can win from the slot on those crossing routes where we saw Sanu, or some of those gadget plays, the end around that he scored on against the Browns last year. But it's primarily a two-target passing game at the wide receiver position. Last year, Green 132, Marvin Jones 103, Muhammad Sanu only 49 targets. They like to feature their two guys. The biggest battle for the Browns this year is going to be who will be that number two guy. And I think if Brian Hartline isn't that number two guy, then Brian Hartline's probably not here. If Brian Hartline wins that job, and then I think that Brian Hartline will be here.
Because of expense?
Because of expense and just overall philosophy and age, all those factors.
He's what, 28, 29?
29, I believe.
How old is Hawkins?
Andrew Hawkins.
32?
Not quite that old. Born in 86. So Andrew Hawkins is 30. Brian Hartline, born in 86. He'll be 30, turn 30 in the season in November. November the 22nd, as a matter of fact. So Hawkins has a contract on his side. But I think you could see all four of those guys make it, the four rookies. And then I think you're going to see a fight from, you know, whether it's somebody at the bottom that they think can help on special teams, a Hall, a Jennings, can Terrell Pryor show something to be kept around as a gadget player, a la Muhammad Sanu, Hawkins, Hartline, Gabriel. Those guys are going to be fighting for spots.
Yes.
And I think they're fighting themselves as much as they're fighting these rookies. Because I don't think Higgins and Peyton, if they play well, they'll make it because they can come in and play. Lewis is a project that they did not take him in the fourth round to put him on the practice squad, I don't think. He'll be here for speed. And as you said, this is a guy that you should expect to be able to become a gunner on your special teams team.
Yes, he's a freak. I mean, he did work as a DB.
Right, so he's got to be able to do that.
Correct.
It's going to be a big battle. All right, this is going to be, I think, really in the offseason, it's the one position we've all wanted addressed. It was addressed. How this plays out certainly will be interesting to see. All right, we'll come back. Final thoughts. Zagura Wilhelm gives a meatball here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, based on what we were talking about there, we're back on CBD. Zagura Wilhelm gives a meatball. Gentlemen, who do you expect to be the opening day wide receivers, your top two wide receivers for the Browns?
I'm going to go Coleman, Peyton.
Okay. That's what I was going to say, so I'll change mine. Gibbs?
Oh, boy. Coleman for sure. I feel like Brian Hartline might be a wide receiver that starts for this football team.
All right, so then I'll take Coleman and Higgins. I think those are the three, what we just hit on, were the three options.
Correct.
I don't think Lewis is going to be ready to start week one.
No, Lewis is going to start the season on the practice squad.
You think?
Yes.
I think he'll be on the 53, but I think he'll be a special teams contributor early.
Okay.
That'd be crazy if they drafted him in the fourth round, tried to send him to practice squad, and he just got taken. I mean, the point of, you know what I mean?
But also, wasn't he a stretch to be a fourth rounder anyway?
Not to the Browns, obviously.
Not to the Browns, but I mean to everyone else, to take him in front of Jordan Payton and his production, and take him in front of Hollywood Higgins and his production.
Well, I mean, who knows where they would have gotten drafted had the Browns not taken him. Every other team in the league passed on those guys multiple times. It will be interesting. I think it's the most intriguing battle of camp, to be perfectly honest. What ends up happening at that position, the wide receiver position? Who makes the final 53? Who's playing? Who's producing? And we'll get our first look at these rookies tomorrow when rookie minicamp kicks off. We'll have the latest for you on that. And, of course, we hope to see you at FanFest this Saturday at First Energy Stadium. Get your tickets at clevelandbrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. For Meatball, Jason Gibbs, and Matt Wilhelm, still the man, I am Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Yes, on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.